From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. GQ called him the South's best-dressed man. She was fashion editor at Condé Nast. Together, they are Sid and Ann Mashburn, the husband and wife design duo behind Mashburn. With five brick-and-mortar shops across the country and a booming online business, the name has become synonymous with style. And they are indeed a pair of extraordinary Georgians here to talk about fashion, lifestyle, Atlanta, and whatever else comes up. Sid and Ann Mashburn, welcome.
Thank you, Virginia.
So great to be here.
Really happy to have you with us. Now, I read that you wanted to recreate the vibe of shops and boutiques in Europe and Asia when you were building that first shop. How did you want to bring that experience to customers here?
That's half true, because there's one other element that we wanted to recreate, too. It's really the idea of a small town, local, independent specialty store.
Uh-huh. This from the grandson of the woman who ran Collier's Cash and Carry?
Golly, where'd you find that?
Well, you know, yeah. we do our homework.
Besta Collier. Yeah, she was incredible. And at one time they had clothes store, hardware store, implement store, and furniture store in a small agricultural community. So it was definitely in the blood. And so anyway, I grew up, as soon as I got my driver's license, I wanted to go get a job working at a clothing store. And sure enough, we had cousins that had a store over in Pearl, and I went to work at Busick's Menswear in Pearl, Mississippi. You know, that it just was something you know, what can you argue with? Clothes and meeting people and spending time around clothes, the ingredients of that are just fantastic. And also being part of a community and really understanding what your role in the community is. And that's kind of the way we even see what our role is today. We're not just a store where you know, come buy stuff. It's like, how do we involve our stuff in the ourselves in the state of affairs locally, and try to do that in every city that we go to.
You two opened your first store in Atlanta. It was Sid Mashburn at the time on the West Side in 2007. Why Atlanta?
Great question. I'll let the smarter person
nice move.
That.
Good yes. move.
We met and lived and had a careers in New York, but prior to this new venture that we were going to do with Sid, we were living in Wisconsin because Sid was recruited to go out there. He worked in Dodgeville, and we lived in Madison. So we kind of just said, are we going to go back to New York? Or are we going to throw the doors open and pick a city? And New York was a little bit prohibitive. That was really our home, and that's, you know, where fashion is, and that would have made a lot of sense. But as this was entrepreneurial and we were funding it ourselves, we picked a city that was a little more manageable, looked at a bunch of different ones. How many did we have?
Nine total.
Yeah. Boston, Washington, D.C. I mean, cities, a lot of them in the Northeast, but I think I read something that it mentioned, like, Atlanta being a, you know, press piece on it. And Sid is from Mississippi. I'd always been really charmed by that. You know, he had a thick Southern accent when I met him, and it was at the time when that still seemed kind of romantic. So I thought, let's...
No more. And now?
Yeah,
no more.
Now it's... The world has changed. I live here now. But I said, how about Atlanta? And he looked at me and he was like, are you kidding? That sounds like a great idea. So we came and explored, and Sid has a really great instinct for finding his way around, and he just sniffed around, and he went and got some tacos at Taqueria. Do you want to take it from here?
I knew that I had one friend, great friend from college, Lisa Hoffman, who's married to Nick Hoffman, and they took me to dinner, and I'm thinking to myself, why in the world would anyone stand outside in January to wait to have a taco in Atlanta?
And this must be Taqueria del Sol, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we ate there, and I drove literally or felt like literally every street between the Underground and Lenox Mall over the next 4 days. And slightly discouraged, but not completely, I had to go back to the airport, and I said, you know what, I'm going to swing back and get one of those tacos at Taqueria del Sol. I drove into the parking lot. It's a beautiful Friday. It's still cold, but at least the crocuses were popping. The parking lot was teeming with people. I'm like, shoot, this is not even a popular neighborhood. And so I wandered into a kid's store there, B. Braithwaite, and said, hey, how would a men's store do? And Chaffee Braithwaite was like, fantastic. When can you sign up? She said, I think the guys in back are closing down. I went back there, and sure enough, the store behind her was boxing up to leave. So the place was available. I found out who the landlord was. I spoke to him. He said, send me a business plan. You know, Ann and I are super visual people, so the narrative part was a little more difficult than the picture part for us. But anyway, I got a call back from him saying, when can you open? I said, oh, you read the business plan? He said, no, but I looked at the pictures. That's all I needed to know.
And he's so visual, too.
He's pretty visual himself. But Ann came down quickly because we have five kids. And, of course, that's the first thing you're thinking of is, what are we going to do about school? And you can take it back from
and
there.
I think I was talking to you about it because as a new Atlantan, I really appreciated the daffodils in February. And I thought, you know, I really could live here. And it's an amazing city. We just plunged in and now we're here.
Tacos, crocuses, daffodils.
Yep, that's
all
it.
Here.
Yeah. All the right ingredients. Yeah. They're also, while we, you know, one thing that I'm pretty, I love shopping. And in a sense, that's kind of one reason we're in this business is because I love clothes, I love people, and I love that whole thing about shopping. And so I'd done quite a bit of research on who was here. And while there were some good stores here, there was a dearth of local independent specialty stores mm-hmm. of what we were aspiring to be. And certainly not any that were going to be making as much of the product as we intended to make. So we saw that as an opportunity too. And, you know, we picked this place on the west side and we didn't know what we were getting into.
What was going on there then? That was 12 years ago.
Well, it was very sophisticated, but it wasn't as teeming with footsteps for sure. You know, there were days when maybe four people would come in the store. Mm. I would go get that taco at lunchtime and look around and say, do you think I should go up to the men in the restaurant and ask if they know that there's a place they could go get some jeans if they needed them? So it was step by step, but it was a really cool. I mean, you felt to us, this is what we thought it felt like. We thought it felt like the meatpacking district in New York when we were living there in the late 80s. We just knew that there was energy and pretty soon more people would come, and I think they have.
No, it's funny she said that because I never really thought of it, but I actually asked her to marry me at Tortilla Flats. Do you remember Tortilla Flats? So Mexican restaurants are very important in our relationship. And it was in the meatpacking district.
That's true. On the edge of it, yeah.
We have to talk about that then. How did you guys meet?
This is a good story.
That's the best story of all.
I plucked him out of the sand is what happened. Sid and I were only just short of our 24th birthdays. And I saw him on the beach. We had taken the train out to Long Beach.
June 2nd, 1985.
Yeah, so I saw him on the beach. I thought he was really cute. And I made up a story to go meet him. And I asked him if he knew when the trains went back to New York. And then as it happened, he followed me back to the train. We basically met on the train. And then he finally had the courage to ask me out on a date. It took a little
while. Split at Babylon. Yeah. Okay. And then fortuitously waved goodbye at Penn Station down the platform from each other. I went to call her. I thought, boy, super stalky in New York and didn't. And so she wound up calling me later that week. She actually helped me get my first job in design, too.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, so let's get to that. You were both well-known in New York. Sid, you were a menswear designer for brands including Ralph Lauren and J. Crew, and editor of both Vogue and Glamour.
I have to correct you. I was actually just the assistant at Vogue.
Thank you for the spread of fake news right there.
Though when the engagement announcement came in Sid's tiny town in Brandon, Mississippi, they did say I was the fashion editor of Vogue magazine. I didn't correct that
her
one.
Picture was like a 14 and a half by 18 in the local paper.
But, yeah, we were both young and just beginning going in design. I worked for this really very well-known, famous editor named Polly Mellon at Vogue and worked with all the, you know, very best models, photographers, Richard Avedon, Steven Meisel. It was amazing. And Sid was learning how to design working at this little company called British Khaki, but I had taken him to a cocktail party at a great apartment on the Upper East Side, and he met the people who were just beginning to start J. Crew.
Startup catalog company in New Jersey.
Huh.
Kind of the trifecta of something not a lot of designers from New York want to work at.
But they thought he looked cool, which he did. And it was, a young group of people, and he went out there to interview, and they hired him as the very first menswear designer of J. Crew in, what was it, 86?
Yes. And kind of characterized my look as sort of preppy hippie. And that was kind of J. Crew at the time.
Yeah.
No logo, well-priced, pretty cool, not too cool, you know. It was fun also because it was not a lot like a bunch of super professionals. I mean, we were...
So you had a lot of latitude to do...
To figure it out.
Way more than I deserved.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah. And one of the first items I worked on was this thing called the barn jacket. When the receipts for that started pouring in, they let the leash out a little bit more, you know. And it just was cool because it was not too designery. It was very... unlike a lot of other things that were going on in New York at the time.
Sid Mashburn, he and his wife Anne are the power couple behind the eponymous fashion and lifestyle brand, opened their first menswear store, Sid Mashburn, on Atlanta's West Side in 2007. Since then, they've expanded their business to include Anne Mashburn, a woman's store, and kid and lifestyle brands with shops in Houston, Washington, D.C., Dallas, Los Angeles, and, of course, Atlanta. Well, I want to know a little bit more about your experience at Vogue, Anne, because those of us who've seen the Devil Wears Prada, you were working for Polly Mellon, not Anna Wintour.
Yeah.
But she had assisted under Diana Vreeland, mm-hmm, a kind of mm-hmm. legend in fashion editorial. What was that like? Were you that character, the Anne Hathaway character?
Yes, I was absolutely that character.
I can't imagine looking at you now.
She grew up too. Actually, Anna Wintour was in the office next to me at the time, and she was merely the creative director. And if you are really in tune, you can go into my shop in Atlanta, and on the mood board there's a Polaroid picture of my editor, Polly, at a fashion show, and Anna is behind her, which is really a big deal that she was in the second row at the time. So it defines an age of her coming up and then taking over. But at any rate, it was really an amazing time at Vogue. I was, you know, it was such a hard job. And that movie of, it was just a different type of leadership then. It was very old school. You were meant to just pay and, you know, and you had all this responsibility and very little way to figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the main thing is just trying to figure out how to survive. But I got to work with, you know, I was on Cindy Crawford's very first Vogue photo shoot.
Whoa.
I worked with lots of celebrities. Isabella Rossellini was kind of the cover girl during that period, and Brooke Shields. So going to, you know, it was really different. It was really exciting to see all the different kinds of ways that photographers really made the pictures. Richard Avedon ran a really tight ship and had this, you know, precision-built studio where Steven Meisel maybe was just very downtown hipster. The music was always crashing loud. And, you know, just, again, working with all these amazingly beautiful, but a lot of the women were really insecure. And I've talked about this before, but my biggest takeaway from working at Vogue was that the work that the women did there, they were these really accomplished, handsome women who really knew how to dress and had so much confidence. But a lot of them weren't, you know, the great beauties, certainly, naturally, that some of the models were. But I was always amazed at how the women I wanted to be like was not the girls the same age as me who were getting paid for their beauty, but it was these women who were just smart and successful, knew how to dress, but they didn't spend a lot of time worrying about their physical beauty. It was really more how they presented themselves and the confidence they had and just how they took delight in how they dressed every day, and they wanted to present themselves a certain way, but it wasn't really necessarily about what you were born with.
Did that in any way push you toward the direction of retail and designing for women like that?
You know, not especially. I mean, I think it really, I was so grateful for it because it helped me check that off my list. Like, for the rest of my life, I knew how I wanted to look and I knew how I wanted to dress. And I felt pretty good about that because I had all this great training to teach me how to do that. And I was inclined to that anyway. I mean, I went into that business because I loved it. I sewed as a kid and I made my rooms look a certain way because I loved design. But the real impetus for me starting this business, my part of the business with Sid, was kind of another real estate driven decision, mm-hmm. that our landlord really pushed me to do it. A shop opened next to us, and Michael just looked at me and he said, "You've got to do this. You're going to make it great, whatever you make it." And I thought a lot about it. I was a little nervous because I had my own style and I didn't know that everybody would want to look like me. And I didn't necessarily want everyone to look like me, but I thought, you know, if I can make it and just be really careful and make it just the way I want it, but also make it look like it's next to Sid. I mean, we kind of grew up together. We have really similar style, but I was really happy because we had built this business and it was going really well, so I didn't want to screw it up. So in the first year, I just really tried to put things in the shop that define my style. I'm not a designer. I had a ton of help from Sid in making my first collection. But I thought what I am is an editor, and I can teach women about clothes. I can say, you need this, you don't need that. This is how you're going to make yourself look great. You don't need a lot of things. You need the right things, which is Sid's famous quote. But it went really well. You know, I had built the shop with Sid together, but I wasn't in the retail part of it. But then, you know, I was in the shop every day with these women, and I started to love it. And then we went on, and now our daughters are involved in the business. But
one thing that she doesn't really remember that well, but maybe it's more lore than anything, but I seem to remember telling her, because the glass is never half anything for me. It's always mostly overflowing. And so I said, let me just kind of give you fair warning. You're going to lose your free time. This is going to be hard.
I didn't have very much anyway.
We are mother of kids.
This is going to be hard. It's going to be hard to juggle the work. It's going to be hard to get started. You know, there's nothing that's going to be easy about what you're going into. And plus, I'm not sure that you're really going to love retail. And so she said, you know what, though? I really want it to be a testament to the girls of if there's a spot on the field, let's take it. Okay?
Yeah, I didn't want to look back and have them think I was chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought I can, you know, they saw that I had built this with their father, and they thought it was a great idea.
So yeah, being a model to your daughters in exactly some way was right. Part of the motivation.
Standing in the mm-hmm. in the gap, you know, where there's an opportunity, go for it. I was in already, but that really kind of cemented the deal for me.
We're going to take a little break, but since you guys, I know you're both fans of music, you walk into Mashburn, there's always great music playing there. Is there a song that makes you think of either the time that you met or the time that you were looking around in Atlanta for a home?
I got one. When I first met Sid, like 2 weeks into our dating, he made me a mixtape. And on the tape was Al Green, Let's Get Married Today.
Oh, I was jumping the gun. What?
And I thought, oh, that's nice.
The hidden messages of mixtapes.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I had Take Me to the River on there, too. So, you know.
All right. We're talking to Sid and Ann Mashburn, the husband and wife team. He is the CEO of the fashion and lifestyle brand Mashburn. She is chief creative officer. The two designers are speaking with me about the brand that they built, but really about life. I'm Virginia Prescott. We'll be back. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. And today we're getting to know Sid and Ann Mashburn. After careers at J. Crew and Condé Nast, among other big tastemakers, respectively, this dynamic husband and wife design duo and their five daughters packed up their home and relocated to Atlanta to start Sid's own menswear line. In the 12 years since, their flagship store on Atlanta's West Side, which is named for him, has expanded threefold with the creation of Her Line for Women, a kids line, a lifestyle store, and an online retail business. They've also opened up shops in Washington, D.C., Dallas, Houston, and Los Angeles. I visited the Atlanta store recently to get coffee, which we do frequently here.
Welcome to Mashburn Coffee. What can I get for you?
And I saw a friend who had a friend in from Dallas. She said that the Mashburn store there is very different. So how do you create that sense of place in different places?
One thing we wanted to do when we did expand was that we wanted to have the stores look similar, but different enough that it never felt like a chain. And I've used this analogy before, but in the same way that Sid and I have five daughters, you know, they look like they came from the same place, but they're very different looking. So that's kind of how I think physically the shops look. One thing that I did, or Sid and I did together, when we opened his first store, we put this mood board up because I thought, you know, we don't know anyone here. Nobody knows us. And I want them to see kind of what you're about. And I, you know, in everybody's office, I always had my little board that had all my favorite things on it. And Sid always had a really cool one. And when I would go visit him in his office, I always would love to go see, you know, maybe where my picture was and what little book of matches he had from some fun thing we did together. So I thought, I'm going to build this for you, and I'm going to let everybody know who you are. Or we built it together. But anyway, so that kind of sits permanently in each shop. And if nothing else, I think you can go look at those boards in every store and say, I have a pretty good idea of this couple's aesthetic and what they think is kind of cool, and it might appeal to you or not. But I think that the, to Sid's point also, you know, the stores look a certain way, they feel a certain way, the music is a certain way, really, by Sid. He's the music part of the both of us. But I also think it's the people that represent the brand for us, the people who work for us. And we spend a lot of time hiring people, and we love our people, but that's really the first impression somebody has. Is how someone makes them feel. It's not, you know, you can look and you can hear the music and that certainly makes you feel a certain way. But when someone's friendly to you or takes the time to explain something to you, we just keep trying to tell our story to our people, and then they can pass it along.
You know, we always wanted to make sure that it's a place of refreshment. So we always offer a cold or hot drink, depending on what the weather is. We always wanted to be a place where music was not overpowering, but was at least a little bit more than background also. Everything's got to be at least close to PG. That's the other thing is we always wanted it to be a place where whoever came in felt at home. We just got back from a trip to Italy, and I went a couple of days before and was in Naples. And so we wound up in this factory, and the factory was in the basement of a large apartment building. And you walk down this ramp into this factory, and there's a guy standing in these, you know, double doors, big, big guy, probably weighed, you know, 275 pounds, and huge smile on his face. And the whole time we were there, he never stopped smiling, didn't speak English. And when we walked through the factory, everyone there looked up to acknowledge us while we were there. And I was like, this is how we want our place to feel, that no one's too busy to not stop to acknowledge, hey, what up? You know, how you doing? And just kind of say, you're more important than anything I'm doing. And so that was kind of the vibe we wanted to give across, is this is your place. And we kind of joked that, you know, at least on the men's side, it's a fraternity where everyone gets a bid. You know, everyone's invited to be at this place. And when we wrote the business plan, we intentionally said there's no demographic here.
So what does that mean? You're not looking for a certain type to be your customer?
Well, we have an aesthetic. So if you are a customer, you probably like how things look. But it has more to do with, you know, we want to make sure we have opening price point for somebody just to come in and experience the brand. Maybe they, you know, they buy a pair of Levi's. But then we also want to show somebody that we know have the, what the very best looks like. So we may have a handmade suit or, you know, beautiful jewelry that is definitely aspirational.
And it's a bit reflective of the population of the other, you know, merchants that are in our center. Part of our merchandising is good, better, and best. And the good, better, and best is not just to address a price point so much as it is, it defines how do we open our doors to as many people as possible. So Taqueria, it's a $2.50 taco. JCT is a $14 entree. Bacchanalia, you can spend anything. But they have something in common, and that's fresh ingredients, well-made, very thoughtful, what they all do. So it's kind of reflective of the people that are already there, and also some of the people that kind of set the stage for us coming along.
Mm-hmm.
Sid and Anne Mashburn are my guests. They've built a fashion empire, really, with a woman's store and a kids and a lifestyle brand and a men's shop and online shop, as well as brick-and-mortar stores in Houston, Washington, D.C., Dallas, Los Angeles, and here in Atlanta. It's a small-scale empire built on relationships and often noted for feeling more like an updated Southern Provision store, really.
It's a nice way to think of it.
But that is a question, you know, like how do you exist as that kind of business today? I mean, you talked about going to Italy. I'm assuming that you're going for look at fabric or look at manufacture. I don't know. What are you
both,
doing?
Both, all of that. Yeah. Raw materials, manufacturers, ways people do business, build relationships with those people. We're not going to just say, oh, we want this, this, and this. And we kind of, you know, people say, oh, tell me about your private label business. It's like, we don't really have a private label business because we don't just take things from people and pop our name in the label spot. We spend time working with the people and really building something for ourselves that's reflective of what we like and what we think the customers will like.
To answer your question, we started the business to scale it. I mean, Sid opened up a men's retail store, but always in mind that he was going to design the majority of the product that was in it. Mm-hmm. So the we hope that every store feels just like a small, unique specialty store. But in the end, we're building a brand and it's a bigger company. And it was always meant to do that just economically as a business. We needed to scale to make the business work because you could never produce, you know, enough clothing to sell in one store at a price that we do. So,
but, yeah. And that's the thing. You're existing in a fashion universe with huge, you know, upscale brands, really expensive brands, but also fast fashion, you know, the kind of H&M, those kind of retailers that can churn things over very, very quickly. But you still do your own production, correct? Mm-hmm.
We have tailors on site that do the tailoring of the clothes that we have. And we have a really great tailoring shop in our headquarters that make samples for us. We do a lot of work there. But when things are produced for the store, they're produced in factories all over the world.
And you still do bespoke suits?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. That must be a staple of your business, I would imagine.
It is. And it's, if you don't mind, I'll cut to the chase a little bit on the idea of the elephant in the room of what the heck's going on in retail today.
Yes, please.
You know, everybody says, well, Amazon's going to take over. And you're like, in some cases, they may take over, but not for what we do, because we strongly believe in the relationship between us and the customer, and that customer service builds business. Taking care of people builds business. You know, sort of an informal tagline that we have in houses, we're enhancing people's lives. And some people would say, that's a little highfalutin for a clothes store. It's kind of the calling, though. Now, will e-commerce continue to grow and become more popular? Yes.
And I mean, we have a great e-commerce business. We love our e-commerce business.
And frankly, you know, Amazon provides pretty great customer service in that they give you an offering of things that, you know, that you already kind of have some sort of proclivity towards. We like to know that ourselves so that when you come in, we know that you like, a macchiato. You know, or whatever it is, we want to kind of be slightly in front of that. So you feel like this is my place. And sometimes it can almost be as cliche as that old Cheers song.
Everyone knows your name.
Who doesn't want that, right?
This is the personal touch that you're offering. Mm-hmm. But you've now got a woman's line, you've got a kid's line, a lifestyle line, five stores. I'm sure you've thought about this. You said we built the business to scale. What's too big at Mashburn?
I think we'll know when we get there. Yeah. I hope we'll know when we get there. I mean, people always say, what are your plans for the business? I mean, we're trying to grow it just to its full capacity for what it's meant to be. We would love ultimately to have more stores in other cities because, to Sid's point, we love retail and we love the human touch, but we love having a website that, you know, we'd love that to start going internationally.
And brick and mortar opportunities internationally.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, you know, with our raw materials and the makers we use, we don't really cut corners. That's not really in our DNA. Same thing with the business. We don't really want to artificially juice this thing. It'd be great if it popped more from a business perspective. But you know what? In due time. You know, let's be patient, but also not wait.
Your blog actually really impressed me, and it's called You Need This.
And you Need This, I Promise.
You Need This, I Promise. this is a way, it's very personal, though, and talking about, you know, not just design necessarily, design philosophy, but a little bit, you know, it's more the lifestyle, right? And which I think comes across as kind of effortlessly elegant or cool, I would say, maybe more than elegant. So what was the motivation behind that? Was it reaching people and touching all these people you can't necessarily see walk in the store?
Well, this is really a labor of love of mine because I love to write. When I first moved to New York, I went there to be a writer and kind of got sidetracked in the visual side of magazines. But I think I said before, I'm not a trained designer, and I so appreciate my team that helps me do that. But I did know when I went into this that I had a vision. You know, I had a great creative mother, but I just really learned a lot at Vogue. I learned how to see things. I always like to say I can pick out the great among the so-so. But so the tip of my spear in my store was telling women what they needed and why. And because I'm not on the floor anymore, I kind of was losing that. And I thought, you know, I just want to tell someone they need this particular purse and this is why. And so I just thought, you know, I'm just going to write about it. And so we, every 2 weeks, I write about something. And to me, I don't think of myself as super materialistic. And I hate to say, oh, you have to have this. But when you look great and when you feel good, or if you have something beautiful that you touch a lot, like your belt buckle, it actually can make your day feel better. I mean, I know I feel better when I look better. So I thought, I just want to share this with people, explain it to them, and then perhaps they'll, you know, they'll feel a little better about buying something.
Well, you mentioned earlier working with women who didn't spend a lot of time thinking about what they were wearing, mm-hmm. but still projected something.
Yeah. I mean, they just knew it. So it was quick for them. That's my point, is I'm a person that moves quickly. I don't like to waste a lot of time. I hate thinking a lot about it.
She gets dressed 3 times faster than I do.
Really?
Yeah. We could
always wear suits, right?
Yeah, but we could be going out at 7:30 and she can start getting dressed at 7:15 and be ready before I'm finished.
Do you guys like ever wear sweats at home?
Yes, I love active wear. I love to be soft. I like
not me so much.
We have a hard time.
Was he wearing a suit at the beach when you met him?
No, but I will tell you, he is a testament to why a man needs a suit, because it's like his purse. He literally falls asleep in it oftentimes, and they last forever. He rarely dry cleans them. I'll say that too. It's a great value for as much as he wears it. But I think that the women at Vogue, they did care. I mean, I don't want to, you know, they all, you know, had, they looked amazing. But it really was, they weren't so self-obsessed with, you know, it's also a different time. There wasn't a lot of, like, you know, enhancement going on. You know, they were very comfortable, but they just knew how to look great. And I want to teach women that it's not that hard, and you can make it more simple for yourself.
That,
and
that's fairly,
you know, I think it's great for people who really love to do, you know, I have a daughter that like watches all the YouTube videos on makeup, and
right.
She loves all that
she
stuff.
She knows how to contour.
Yeah, exactly, which is not my thing.
Which just mystifies me.
It mystifies me too. She looks pretty good though. But, you know, for women who just kind of want to figure it out, I feel like I can help them figure it out.
That is Anne Mashburn. She and her husband, Sid Mashburn, they're the New York turned, let's say, Wisconsin turned Atlanta power couple that started their own fashion and lifestyle brand back in 2007, since grown to include shops in Dallas, Houston, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles. We'll be back with more after a short break.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name.
From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott, continuing the conversation with Sid and Anne Mashburn, whose menswear line and then fashion and lifestyle brand launched in 2007. It's since grown to include shops in Dallas and Houston and Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and as we heard, maybe the world. So okay. You were talking about the sense of place, and you have deeply woven yourself into the fabric of Atlanta, including, I understand, dressing the Atlanta United team. In suits?
It was not intentional.
What do you mean?
Well, what happened is, you know, we're a small company. Some days we kind of think we're a larger company, but we're still kind of a smallish company. But the way we appear to the outside is more developed than we actually are. So they asked us if we were open to, you know, sponsoring them and making the suits for them. We said, we can't really pull that off. And so they engaged with somebody else who's a very big name. Actually, it's Combos, two companies. I won't mention their names. But it did not work out so well for them. So they came to us to fix the clothes because the fit of the clothes and the quality was not so great. And sometimes it's not always easy to make something out of something that's not so great. But we did it with great intent because they needed it turned around pretty quickly, and it just didn't work out so well. They said, what can you do? And we said, well, we actually have a shipment coming of a full set of suits that are slightly better price point, which are still awesome, full canvas suits from Italy, beautiful fabric in charcoal or in gray that would be perfect for this. And so they said, okay, let's do it. And so we made the suits for them. We fit all the guys on the team. And it was a big success because, of course, you know, Atlanta United then goes on. I don't think anybody had any idea that they were going to turn out as great as they turned out. And that was not even something we were concerned about. We were just glad to be associated with it because we are a sports, kind of a sports crazy, you know, shop.
Yeah, we have some real diehard soccer guys.
That's a big time.
Do you have to, like, you know, make the pants with much bigger thighs because of their big muscly thighs?
We would size them up because you're right, because the ballast is always pretty good on most soccer players. And then they were, you know, a lot of them are European, so they wanted the bottom openings tapered quite a bit. So we would oblige that. But anyway, we wound up, you know, being fortunate enough to be able to go to some games, and it really was unbelievable what that team and what Mr. Blank and what Darren Eels and all of those guys put together in bringing this team to life. And even Don Garber, who's the head of the MLS, came down for the game and came into he was shopping with us. And it was just awesome to hear him. You know, you can feel the excitement around something that's going to change America forever.
Yeah.
It really, and when you go to the game to see the demographics of, you know, little girls, older families, then to also understand what Mr. Blank and Greg Beatles and the guys with their organization did for the food pricing, you know, by making it accessible to all these families. It was like, that's what we want to be about.
Mm.
So it was a gift from God for us to kind of come into this opportunity.
Right at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a great alignment.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also creating a look for people. That's part of what you do. It's always amazed me that somebody can walk into, you know, a designer store and walk out wearing a whole outfit that looks like they just bought an outfit, but not really own it. So how do you help people find something that actually works for them?
Well, one thing I think is nice about our clothes is we try to make it so that, you know, the clothing isn't really the star of the show. We want to make you look like that. So we try to, you know, I think we have more of an understated look that is, I mean, I love fashion and there's some over-the-top things in my shop too, but not as much of that as just things that are just a little more understated and make you feel and look as beautiful as you're meant to be on that particular day. And I think the same thing for Sid's clothes. I think, you know, he's definitely got a look. When I see a man and he's kitted out in Sid's stuff, I can usually, I mean, it's not just that I know the product, but I kind of know the look. And it's a very, why don't you say what you were kind of influenced by when you were growing up?
I had older siblings, and they were always into clothes. You know, back to, you know, my grandparents had the dry goods store. Exactly. And so that was always a big thought in our households, like, what are you wearing? And so I was influenced by my brother, who was about 11 years older than me and a fantastic dresser. And that was of the time of sort of the 60s, the spy shows, you know, I Spy, Get Smart. You had Sidney Poitier, and, you know, In the Heat of the Night. You had Dick Van Dyke, The Dick Van Dyke Show. You know, all these people where the clothes were understated, but definitely had a cut to them, okay? And the cut was closer to the body, so everybody looked a little bit leaner. Okay? And so that's kind of our look.
It's always kind of been his look. Like, he looks the same exactly today as when I mean, he was wearing swim trunks, but
and we're not going to really change. We like that look. That works well for us, and so we want to share that with as many guys as possible. So one thing that was nice in the early days is in the back of our shop, you know, there's the tailor shop, which is open air. Okay, so it's intended that the tailors are part of the show. But anyway, so one thing that Ann overheard one day in the shop, and she said, you know what's nice about when y'all are back there with guys is y'all tend to prescribe and not dictate, okay? And sometimes you have to go, yes, go for it. A little bit the way Ann says, you know, you need this. Some things we feel comfortable saying that about, and it's usually not the higher ticket item because then it feels like you might be pushy about the wrong idea. But really we're trying to think of what is right for you, and what's right for one guy may not be right for another. Early on, we had a guy who practiced law in South Georgia, and we have side vents on our jackets, which are, you know, pretty European. And he said, I can't really wear this. I love this fabric and I love the cut, but I can't wear this in South Georgia. I can't go into a courtroom because they're going to immediately think I'm either Joe Pesci's brother, you know, or somebody who's definitely not from around there. And so we had to kind of adjust a little bit. And so I think probably what we celebrate the most is a combination of American, English, and Italian. We love Italian tailoring. We love English fabrics. And we like the style of America where things are a little bit easier and not quite so precious and not quite so, you know, sort of schmance.
Well, but men are about 30 to 50 pounds heavier probably than when they were in the Get Smart area, your average American.
That's exactly right. So now we have to cut it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And so we
and make sure it fits because, I mean, Sid had the reputation in the beginning that you would see, like, that's like, I'm not tall and skinny. Mm-hmm. I don't like to wear my pants short. But because we have master tailors and because Sid is such a great designer, they can fit any man and he's going to look slimmer.
Like he lost some weight.
Yeah, because of the way the suit fits. It's not about trying to make people look skinny or not what their physique is. And I feel the same way about women. I mean, women come in all different shapes and sizes. And that was also something that was very celebrated at Vogue. It's just making the clothes fit you and be the right cut for your body type.
The fashion industry has had a lot of problems with underweight models, you know, obviously, which can cause terrific body image problems for young girls and young men. I'm not saying it just happens to girls, but since you have five daughters, I'm just wondering if that's been something that girls who grew up in the fashion industry in a way, how do you protect them from that?
You know, I think that, gratefully, I don't think that my girls were too worried about that, but I think about it more now than I did earlier. Our youngest is just turned 18, actually, and the oldest is 28. And I worry about the Instagram to me is just this incredible nonstop comparison thing that I think is really tough. But oddly, it also, she's very comfortable with, you know, unattractive pictures of herself because she's taken so many of them. I think people were perhaps even more vulnerable with their image earlier when they didn't see so many images of themselves, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's something I'm just beginning to think about. But yeah, I think that, you know, anytime, you know, they say comparison is the thief of joy. Mm. And so, you know, I guard against that myself and I try not to compare myself to other people. But again, it's really just how do you help people feel really good about themselves and know that, you know, the choices you make about how you dress are personal and about how you feel as much as how you're going to look.
That's a great point. People wind up, Virginia, in a way, coming to us to get confidence. They're in some level of validation.
Can you teach somebody style?
I think you can. I don't think you can teach somebody to delight in it if they don't. And I think that's fine. I mean, if people don't want to think about it that much, I think that's great. In the same, you know, the eye can be trained. It really can. You just learn, you know, when you start taking art history classes, you look at paintings and then you notice more in them. If you love to read, you get to be a better reader the more that you read. And I think the more you look at clothes, the more you learn about them. I've certainly changed enormously. I mean, I had, you know, my own style when I first started working, but I definitely grew into it in a much bigger way. And I appreciate other people's style in a bigger way than I used to. And some people are born to notice things. And one of my stories that I write about, I talked about that. I moved a lot growing up. And so I trained myself to kind of know what was going on in the room and how people spoke and what they wore so that I could fit in. So that's part of, you know, my personality based on how I was raised, but I think you really can. I feel like I've taught a lot of women how to dress better. The women in my shops have taught more women than I have. And I hope that even just the way we present ourselves on our website kind of teaches people a little bit about why they should appreciate what they're wearing.
You definitely can teach people style, and you definitely want to give them some parameters of where they should go, particularly if they're prone to wander. But at the same time is there also needs to be a little room for delight because it's fun. It's a funny thing, this what you wear. I mean, really—
It tells a story, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah. And it really is crazy how good or how bad it can make you feel. Mm. That's why I think we're in the business of how do we help guys and women feel good in their own skin about what they're wearing.
And now you've started the lifestyle brand and the kids brand. Mm-hmm. So how is that? What was that decision about to extend that even further?
Well, once again, it was a real estate decision.
There we go.
The shop next to my shop opened up. And you know, food and refreshment has always been a big part of our of what we do when somebody walks in the store, and we think it's a part of it was a part of our center. So how do you and hospitality? So we thought, okay, let's take this space and let's open it up and let's make sure we have a really great coffee spot in there and offer a little food. And now that we have it, you know, I made all my own kids' clothes when they were little, and I dressed all these girls. And I thought, you know, that's another little labor of love. I'm not sure how big that will get, but I thought everybody is charmed by smaller things. I thought, let's just make some of the things that we make bigger, let's make them smaller. We've always had lifestyle things smattered around the store, but we thought, let's give it a devoted place so that if you really want to look at stationery, we're going to have what we love about stationery. Books have always been a place in our shop, but this is a more dedicated place to have it. It's a great place to have book signings.
You know, funny enough, I, again, since I love retail, I used to, when I went to school at Ole Miss, I'd go to Square Books on a weekly basis. And what Richard Howorth and his wife and team had done, and Lisa Howorth had done there, is they made a place where books were awesome, but were not intimidating. One of the ways that they enjoyed success was is they had book signings all the time, because that's when people get a chance to sort of live vicarious or to go on a trip without leaving town. And she said she loves to write. Our oldest daughter loves to write. I have an English degree, but I'm not a very good writer. And so books we knew were going to be an important part. And we said, how do we bring the authors in?
We also, you know, we've had an art opening there. So it's kind of a lifestyle space, I would say.
Yeah, and I see that big names like Stan Smith has come through.
Yes, he's a friend. He's a good guy.
You've also shared with local artist Eddie Hernandez, you mentioned earlier, from Taqueria del Sol, a critical person in your coming there. And up-and-coming makers like the artist and Rome, Georgia native Laura Deem. So what's the philosophy behind these kind of collaborations?
We knew when we opened Sid Spot and all the places, we thought, you know, we want to make a place that you want to be and not just buy, and just have a great place for people to come to. Because I love to shop online. We love Amazon. We love our own website. But there is no replacement for a place to go. I loved living in cities where I would just walk out and be in a public place. So I think any idea where you can get people to have a place to go to rather than be at home. So we don't do it all the time, but we love to have events just because it's a celebration of having a place to go and do something fun. It's as simple as that.
Place to go also means feeling included, and the fashion world has long been criticized as too rich, too white, too thin, as we mentioned. How do you consider your responsibility as responsive to a local and very diverse community and as designers and makers whose goods are going everywhere?
Wow, that's a big question.
I'll say this. First of all, it's to reflect who we personally are. And when we opened the business about 3+ years into it, we said, you know what, the company's growing so quickly, we've kind of got to get some of these things that we hold dear down on paper. And so we put together this piece called our culture kit. And in the culture kit, we laid out what are our core values. And our core values are hopefulness, helpfulness, hard work, honesty, humility, and honor. And interestingly, the first two things, the hopefulness and helpfulness, we got from Atlanta. Because when we came here, every single person we met was, today's a pretty good day. I think tomorrow's going to be better. You know, even at a time when 2007, when the economy was just getting ready to kind of fall off the cliff. So we were greeted with this, like, awesome level of hospitality and, you know, downright kind of, you know, low-level love of, hey, how can we help you out here? And so how do we do that with the people that work with us, and how do we reflect those values internally, but also in how we go to market to find our makers, okay? Because I think that's something that's a big concern of people is where are you making? Are you responsibly making? Are you in compliance? And, you know, I came from a background where I worked for Land's End, which was a public company, and compliance was a big issue.
Yeah.
We're not a public company, but that doesn't change who we are. So we want to make sure we're working with the best people, and they wind up being usually small family organizations that hold quality at a high level, that they hold relationships at a high level, that they take very good care of their people. You know, we're all in this together. And so we don't We don't look at what's the price of something where we're going to make it till way, way down the list. We got to make sure it's the right quality, that they treat their people well, that it is a company that holds our values as dear as we hold them.
Sid and Ann Mashburn, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a delight.
Thank you.
Sid and Ann Mashburn. Ann is Chief Creative Officer and Designer at Mashburn, the Atlanta-based fashion and lifestyle brand, and Sid, her husband, designer and CEO. For more on the Mashburns, including some of those things we mentioned, like Ann's blog and, of course, the website, go to gppnews.org. Well, that is our show for today. On Second Thought is produced by Elena Rivera, Leighton Rowell, LaRaven Taylor, and Amelia Brock. Alec Caslow is our engineer, Don Smith, our dean of grammar, and Amy Kiley, senior producer. We always love to hear from you. We're on Facebook and we're on Twitter at OST Talk, or you can email us at onsecondthought@gpb.org. I'm Virginia Prescott. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. This is On Second Thought.